Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Pure Panel Talk Show. I'm Priya Menon, Scientific Media Editor of Pure Talk Blog, and I welcome everyone this evening to our live on-air myeloma support group meeting, hosted by myeloma survivor, blogger, and author Pat Killingsworth. On today's show, Pat is joined by Matt Goldman. Matt is a myeloma survivor and blogger under treatment by Dr. James Berenson of IMBCR. Welcome to the show, Pat and Matt Goldman. The live on-air myeloma support group is an effort to reach out to the online myeloma community as well as myeloma patients and caregivers who do not have a support group near their homes. We meet every month, and the meetings are conducted by Cure Panel and Pat Killingsworth. Today's topic of discussion is treatment extremes, comparing and contrasting different treatment options. Listeners who want to talk to our group leaders can press 1 on their keypads, and we will bring you live on air to share your story or ask your question. I will now hand over to Pat, and he will be beginning with today's meeting. Pat, you're on air.
Thank you, Priya. And thank you, Matt, for helping out tonight.
Oh, you're welcome. Glad to be here.
You know, the thought occurred to me the last time we were on a broadcast together, our voices are very similar. So
we could be the same person. Who knows?
Yeah. So I'm not sure it's important for people to tell us apart, but I'm like, I've heard that voice somewhere before, and you know how it is. You hate your voice. Recorded, right? I mean, it's not the voice you hear. But anyway, we have a lot to cover tonight, so I'd like to get started. And we've had a number of email questions, which is great. And hopefully we've got some listeners. Priya was telling me that the last meeting that we had, over 2,000 people ended up listening to the broadcast, most on a tape delay basis, which is fine. But, of course, the advantage of registering and being able to ask your question live is that you can do follow-ups. So if there are any callers tonight, you'll get priority. Priya will let me know. Just cut me off, Priya, when we've got somebody, and we'll get to you right away. This is a relatively complicated topic, but I think that we can give a spin, a perspective on this that might be helpful to a lot of patients. We're not doctors. Matt and I are not physicians. We're both up to date on a number of different things, but there is a different perspective, and I'm hoping that we can help as we describe these treatments from a patient's perspective. That maybe something clicks, maybe something hits home that doesn't when you're talking to your physician or his nurse, and can make a sense out of all of this. So the title of our discussion this evening is Treatment Extremes, Comparing and Contrasting Different Treatment Options. And here's the thing. Multiple myeloma in the vast majority of patients, 95% or more of patients, will respond to darn near anything up front, even dexamethasone, something as simple, or prednisone, will help slow down or knock myeloma back for a period of months or even a year or so when someone's newly diagnosed. So myeloma tends to be sort of fragile from the start and very susceptible or open to treatment. But as time goes on, as we all know, it gets tougher and tougher. Between relapses, the remission periods or the period where you have your myeloma under control tend to get shorter and shorter. And that's the challenge that these researchers and our doctors face. And so far, nobody's really been able to figure this thing out other than we try a new drug, and hopefully that'll knock it back for a little while. So I think doctors need to be careful what they prescribe and how they prescribe it up front, because I think order really does make a difference in how you're treated and the way that you're treated. That's open to some debate. Before I get to Matt and he describes his situation, I just want to give you a little background on what's going on here. So when you go to, let's say you go to a medical oncologist in Lincoln, Nebraska, at a local cancer center, and that oncologist maybe treats 3 or 5 or 6 myeloma patients a year, and prior to due diligence, prior to the appointment, goes in, reads a couple papers on what to do in a newly diagnosed patient, and that doctor is never going to be wrong. Because like I described before, almost anything should work up front. The question is, what about later? What about first relapse, second relapse? Should you transplant, not transplant? So it's just not that simple. Everybody's always in a hurry to get a handle on this thing and to treat it right away. Sometimes I think that's a mistake. It doesn't tend to be a particularly fast-moving cancer, but there's panic. Not only does a patient and their loved ones panic, but doctors can be in a hurry to do something too. And sometimes I think it just pays to step back and try to figure out what's going on. So that's what we're going to talk about tonight. When you walk into that doctor's office in Lincoln, Nebraska, there are a number of different factors that he's going to look at, he or she, are going to look at when they try to figure out how to treat you. Your age, very important. A lot of myeloma patients, well, the average patient would be over 70 years old. If you're 78 years old, you're probably not going to be a candidate for a transplant. It's possible. But so that opens up a new treatment window on the side for a well-informed oncologist or hematologist. Comorbidities. Are they diabetic? Do you have heart issues? Are you asymptomatic or symptomatic? Maybe your blood counts are off, and everybody just started digging and investigating, and somebody finally figured out, hey, I think you have multiple myeloma, but you don't really exhibit any symptoms. Or maybe, like me, you have a lot of bone damage, and I believe, like, up front, and I believe Matt had some kidney issues. So if you're symptomatic, what are those symptoms?
I had what I wanted.
I'm sorry? Okay. Treatment philosophy. A physician who, a specialist, will have a specific treatment philosophy that Dr. in Lincoln may or may not. And this is where it gets dicey. This is where things get a little extreme. I like to think of treatment as a continuum, sort of like the pants on fire meter that you might see in the newspaper, whether a politician is telling the truth or not. I don't know why that sticks in my head. But think of, you know, a half circle with an arrow that can move from one side to the other. And on one side of that scale or that continuum or that meter would be what's called an incremental approach.
I shouldn't curse how it happened. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry?
Anyway. We got people calling in. That's right.
They're already calling. That's great. Go ahead. We didn't want to just listen to me talk. Go ahead.
I just muted them. Actually, I think they were on mute when they called in. Go ahead, Kat.
Okay. This shouldn't take too much longer, and then Matt can talk about his situation a little bit, and then let's take live questions before we get to any of the ones that were sent by email. That'd be great. So an incremental approach would be, believe it or not, they call these treatments like doublets or triplets. I mean, what is that? But that's what they do. A doublet might be Revlimid and dexamethasone, or Velcade and dexamethasone. A triplet would most likely be Revlimid, Velcade, and dexamethasone, or it could use Doxil, or Cytoxan, thalidomide, or some of the new drugs. They're normally used in combination. Almost all myeloma drugs work better with dexamethasone, dex. Patients usually don't like it. Tough side effects. Some a lot tougher than others. But these drugs all work 20, 30, and 40% better when they're combined with dexamethasone. So Mayo Clinic, for example, a number of the specialists there use this incremental approach. Use a drug until it stops working, then you try the next drug. You might transplant right away, you might transplant later, but it's a very step-by-step approach. They're going for quality of life. They want to keep toxicity to a minimum. Now let's go to the other extreme. University of Arkansas Medical School, the myeloma MIRT, it's called there. Dr. Barlogi's he has a coaching tree. You know, all these doctors that have learned and taught and treated under him, and they've gone out into the world, and he believes strongly that you use tandem transplants right up front if you can, and lots of combination of drugs before, during, and after the process. Three and four drug maintenance up to 3 years after the tandem transplants. You're going to hit the myeloma hard. You're going to hit it with everything you've got, and the idea is, especially for a low-risk patient, you're going to have a shot, he says, to cure it. Others say maybe not cured, but you're looking at a decade or more, living a decade or more. Another extreme would be an allogeneic or a donor stem cell transplant. Especially in younger patients, they can be risky, but you're looking at a 10 or 15% chance that you'll go at least a decade myeloma-free. Some younger patients like to take an aggressive option like that. And, of course, there's everything in between. It's very complicated. That's why a number of us in the myeloma community, online myeloma community, stress, get a second opinion. You need to see a specialist. It's complicated stuff. Small cell lung cancer, pretty much one or two treatment options, open, shut, no real controversy. With myeloma, totally the opposite. The new drugs are coming every 6 months to a year, and it's happening too fast, and someone who's not a specialist just has trouble keeping up. All right, I'll take a breath. By the way, today was my infusion day. I was treated today, and yes, if I seem to be speaking a little quickly, dexamethasone day. So I'll try to remember to breathe and slow down a little bit. Matt, could you introduce yourself and just talk about, you have sort of an unusual treatment situation. Could you take some time and tell us about that?
Sure, Pat. First of all, you seem to have it under control. I can't even tell that you're on Dex right now. Yeah,
I'm a junkie, and you don't even know it.
Right. I'm out here in Los Angeles. I was diagnosed in May 2011, and I was actually in that 5% that Pat mentioned, that the first for the first treatment protocol didn't work with me. I had a local hematologist, and my symptoms were low blood count, fatigue, fevers. I didn't know. My kidneys are impacted. I didn't even know my kidneys were impacted at the time. But I didn't have any bone problems. So we tried, like Pat mentioned, Velcade and dexamethasone as my first treatment, and that did nothing for me. The myeloma progressed. We switched me to Doxil and dexamethasone. Again, that didn't work. Meanwhile, at the same time, I had in the back of my mind, I wanted to go, there's the City of Hope here, a hospital here that they do transplants. And my intention at the time was to get the myeloma under control, get my kidneys under control, and do this stem cell transplant. Because none of the treatments were working, my myeloma got worse and my kidneys got worse. So City of Hope actually, if the kidneys, one of the measures on kidneys is creatinine, that they test from your blood work, and if your creatinine's over a certain amount, City of Hope won't do the transplant because it's a little bit more dangerous for the patient if your kidneys are severely damaged. After Doxil, we tried another chemo drug, thalidomide, which didn't do anything either. At this point, I'm about 3 months into knowing that I had myeloma. Also, at this point, my local hematologist had suggested I should go. He gave me a couple of names of some myeloma specialists, and one was James Berenson. So we went and saw Dr. Berenson maybe in June or July of 2011, and where he's also different, where I'm sort of different, I was 49 when I was diagnosed, and again, I didn't respond to the first three treatments we tried. Dr. Berenson's a little bit different as well, that he's not a believer in stem cell transplants. He would rather treat patients with chemo drugs and get it under control, and you get to a point where your myeloma is pretty stable and not really impacting your life, and you're leading your life normally. So I saw him as we were trying the third different chemo drug. That didn't work, so he put me on something called Treanda, which is used more for lymphoma. But that did the trick. So with Treanda and dexamethasone and still Velcade, we got the myeloma under control. And I was still pondering getting myself to a position where I could do a stem cell transplant, but as we went along and as Dr. Berenson's treatments were more effective on me and I started to feel better, I kind of put the transplant away for a while, and I haven't even considered it since. I did do a stem cell. I harvested my stem cells back in December 2012. One of the side effects is with some of these medicines, like Revlimid and then Treanda that I was on, is that kind of impacts. There's a lot of side effects, but one of them is that it impacts your body's ability to make new stem cells and all that. So I harvested mine knowing that it would be tough to, the longer I went without harvesting, it would be tougher to collect enough stem cells if I wanted to do a transplant sometime in the future. So right now my stem cells are sitting frozen away. Maybe 12 or 13 months ago, we got my myeloma down to a real manageable level where I wasn't feeling any of the effects. I was back to working full time. I was back to exercising as I was before. Everything was pretty normal. And so 12 or 13 months ago, I went on a maintenance program, which I've been on ever since. And my maintenance, which is very common for a lot of myeloma patients, is I do infusion every 2 weeks. My infusion is Velcade and dexamethasone. And then there's a couple of drugs I take at home in between those 2 weeks, including a different steroid called Mendrol. And it's all kind of become routine. Like I said, I'll be coming up on 28 months since my diagnosis in a few days. Right now, everything's working great. I feel great. Like I said, I'm working full time. I used to ride my bike. That was one of the ways I knew I was sick is like when I was riding my bike, I just couldn't even catch my breath and I was getting tired, and I'm back to doing rides that I used to do. So everything's kind of back to normal other than every 2 weeks I have to go in for infusion. But even that has become pretty much routine. In terms of my kidneys, they've bounced back a lot. I was right on the verge of doing dialysis, and actually one of my kidney doctors, who is no longer my kidney doctor, she wanted me to do dialysis, and sort of for me mentally, I wasn't at the point where I could handle that on top of everything else. It all becomes a little overwhelming. My kidneys have bounced back pretty well. They're never going to be what they used to be, just because of scar tissue and things like that, the damage from the myeloma. But as far as I can tell, there's no problem with them. It's just, you know, the blood counts. You know, when they check my blood is when we see that they're not working perfectly well. My bones are pretty good. I haven't had any bone problems up to this point. So on many fronts, I'm kind of an oddball on this. And again, you know, in terms of my age, in terms of I didn't respond to the first treatment, and I haven't done a stem cell transplant. So
Matt, it's so wonderful that you're doing well.
Well, thanks, Pat. Yeah, I'm really happy with where I'm at. It's, you know, I'm doing better than I ever could have imagined. And so our goal now is just like everybody, like Pat, like anyone else that has this, is to keep it going, keep doing how we're doing.
Matt, how old are you?
I was 49 when diagnosed, so I'm 51 now.
Okay, and I was 51 when I was diagnosed, and it's been 6 years, so I'm 57.
Yeah.
That makes us a little unusual. We're certainly younger than the average myeloma patient.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really difficult at first, you know, and I'm sure a lot of folks who are more recently diagnosed, it's really a challenge when you go online and start reading about myeloma and you start reading about all these different treatment options. I mean, it's really, it's hard to know the right thing to do. And I think with me, I knew I wanted, and I did get a second opinion from another myeloma doctor, actually, Dr. Brian Dury, who's here in LA. But I think it's important to see a specialist, but I think it's also important that you're comfortable with your doctor. I was real comfortable with Berenson from the get-go, and I liked his philosophy, and although I had doubts in the back of my mind if I was heading down the right path, I figured this is the path that I've chosen, and I'm going to go all in and see what happens. And so far, it's worked out pretty well.
Thanks, Matt. If we were doing a case study, if this was a course, which it is absolutely not supposed to be. We're gonna go to the callers here in just a moment. You know, you could break some things down with Matt's situation. Yes, it's very unusual that something wouldn't have worked for him simply right up front. But I do, and another interesting thing, at 6 years, a year or so ago, I started Velcade. Velcade and dexamethasone by themselves, and they're working for me. Matt, that sounds like that's what's working for you.
That's working for me. Honestly,
well, the alternative drug you're on is a steroid also. It's very similar.
Yeah, and I think I forgot to mention, I'm on Revlimid also, which I take.
Oh, Suyarbig. And that's what I was going to mention. Literally 100% of patients respond to RVD or VRD. Revlimid,
yeah.
Velcade, and Dex. It's interesting why doctors choose to do what they did, but had you started with Velcade earlier, they would have got a handle on it right away, obviously. Velcade's working for you now.
Mm-hmm.
So, it doesn't put everyone into remission, but it at least slows it down or knocks it back. I just think that's interesting. Priya, let's get to callers right away if they're there. I hate to keep people waiting. That's our job.
Callers can press 1 on their keypad if you want to talk to us about the leader. And we'll bring you live on air. I can see a number of callers, but I don't think they want to speak on air fast. They're a bit shy, I think.
Oh, okay. Well, and that's understandable.
Yeah.
to wrap things up a little bit, and then we'll get to some questions that people had emailed us. When you're a patient, you know, and you make a decision like Matt made, or I didn't talk much about my situation, but the decisions that I made or someone else makes. That's a very personal decision. It's a life or death situation. You're buying, Matt used the term buying in. You're buying into this thing, this treatment philosophy, and you're trusting your doctor that hopefully you're making a good choice and it's the right thing to do. And what that clouds, that clouds our ability to look at other therapy options and other approaches, I think, with an open mind. So when I first started, I was a Mayo Clinic patient, incremental approach, and of course I felt that was the right way to go. And through the years, I've met a number of patients being treated at in Arkansas at the University of Arkansas Medical School there in the Myeloma Center. And they feel very strongly that the more aggressive upfront approach is right. And I remember us going, you know, these long email debates and on the phone and sometimes even in person, and people, you know, transplant, don't transplant, very emotional, maintenance, not maintenance, very emotional. I mean, these are, this is our life that we're talking about here, our lives, and it's understandable, but it's taken some time. But I want to know, at this point, I don't feel like I really have a treatment bias, because what I've seen is, over the years, a lot of the things that the doctors in Arkansas with the hit it hard up front approach have done are now proving to become more mainstream, and they're also softening their approach some. And a lot of other treatment centers are adopting a number of different things that Arkansas has done over the years, and they have a pretty good track record, one of the best for longevity among their patients. So I'd like to think I'm pretty open about all of this. I think there are pros and cons. And Dr. Berenson, I know Dr. Berenson. He's a good guy. He is not a transplant fan. And I think, like a patient, sometimes doctors hold on to bias. I hate to think that somebody just stubbornly refuses to transplant on principle when it might be one of the next best option for somebody. I delayed my transplant, and Matt's delaying his transplant, and I think that's a perfectly good choice. And the statistics, clinical studies are bearing that out. But along with a Revlimid or a Velcade, transplanting is a main therapy option, and to just arbitrarily take it off the board, I think, can be a mistake. And conversely, tandem transplants all of a sudden, doing two transplants within 3 or 4 months of each other, they're making a comeback. And for a while they were out, and now they're in. Sort of like bell bottoms. Yeah. Well, I guess bell bottoms aren't in, but you get the analogy. Matt, let's go to some of these questions.
Okay.
So, well, since I have had an allo transplant, my own cells, and by the way, I had trouble harvesting also. These days, that's unusual. There are a couple new drugs out, and the harvest usually only takes 2-3 days. How long did yours take?
5 days.
Okay, 5 days. Mine took 12. I went in 12 days. It's a good thing I had a port. So I'll take the transplant questions here, and the first one from Pam is a transplant-related question. Pam writes, from what I hear, it is only possible to have 2 allo transplants. Is this true, and have you ever heard of a person having 3? And the answer is no, Pam, that's not true. There's no arbitrary number. I know patients that have had 4 and 5 transplants. I also know patients that have had multiple allogeneic or donor transplant. So I think it really depends on the patient. I know I harvested enough cells for 3 transplants. Matt, how many cells do they take? Do they collect?
We only got enough for 1 transplant. We only got maybe less than 4 million stem cells.
Mm. Okay, see, I stuck it out to 9 million. At about 600,000 a day, it was a long After they filled me full of so many double doses of Neupogen, I did start producing some more cells toward the end. So they collected just over 9 million for me. How about question two from Ann? Can you take that one? Do you have the question in front of you? I'll read it for you. Ann says, my husband is newly diagnosed as of the end of May. His last Velcade treatment will be on September 16th, and then he will begin the process of chemotherapy and stem cell transplant at Northwestern Hospital. I just want to know, what should I expect, and what are the odds? Oh, there's another transplant question, sorry. What are the odds that the transplant won't take and he will need a second transplant? I'm new at this and unsure of what we're heading into. Thank you. Also, is the incidence of multiple myeloma increasing? For a cancer that I never heard of before, I sure seem to learn a lot of people with this diagnosis lately. Maybe I'm just more attuned to it now, and that is the case, actually. If it is increasing, is there any speculation as to why? I don't believe it's increasing. It's about 20,000 cases in the United States a year, and I think if you go back 30 years, it was probably 18,000 or something like that, and the difference could very easily be there are it's caught earlier these days, and some people were probably dying without knowing what they're dying from. To answer your question about the transplant taking, that's probably not the way to look at this thing. Again, I'm not a physician. It's not so much will it take. The bone marrow should certainly make a comeback and start to grow and regenerate. It's a question of will it work. Now, mine did not work. So we faced a choice of transplanting again or just going back to some drugs that had worked for me in the past. Unfortunately, we've been able to tweak those, and that's working. But now, as of this past month or two, the decision may well have been or should have been, can't go ahead and transplant again. I'm glad I wasn't. It's no fun. But a major study just came out of Europe that showed a real significant advantage to a patient whose transplant didn't work to try a second one. But my doctors made a very good point. They said, why the heck would we do something again that didn't work the first time? So here's a perfect example of one set of doctors having a totally logical reason to do what they did, and another set of doctors saying, after reading a clinical study like this one, this large one in Europe, saying, no, we should do tandem. So, it isn't easy stuff, and sometimes it's just uncomfortable with. And hopefully it's not because you're chicken. I just didn't want a transplant. So when Revlimid and dexamethasone worked for me, I said, heck no, I'm not doing it. I'm going to wait. And I'm not sure that's the right way to make a decision, but I think it's worked for me. So, Matt, Michael asks, I'm curious about the benefits of maintenance chemotherapy following a stem cell transplant as opposed to consolidation. You want to grab that one?
Yeah. Again, I didn't have a stem cell transplant, but my experience and my understanding is even like I said, I'm on, and actually this kind of combines with Paul's question about Revlimid maintenance. I'm doing, we treated my myeloma. We went after it hard when we finally found a drug that worked, and then we got the myeloma stable, and then we went on maintenance program, which again is Revlimid, Velcade, and Dex. And like Pat said, that's pretty standard for folks even after a stem cell transplant. I know there's some people where the transplant works so well that they're drug-free, but the majority of patients are on the same basic maintenance protocol, with the Revlimid. The benefits are it just keeps, myeloma's a funny cancer that sort of, in most cases, you know, at some point it'll come back. And the question is when, and the goal is to keep it under control as long as possible. And so that's where maintenance chemotherapy comes into play, is just keeping it stable, keeping where it's kind of in the background and under control. So, I mean, that's the benefits right there of maintenance therapy. So however you go after your myeloma initially, if you need to go after it hard with drugs, if you need to do the stem cell transplant, in all likelihood, once you get it under control, get it into partial remission, complete remission, you're most likely going to be on maintenance chemotherapy. And again, the benefits are it keeps it under control. It keeps keeps you living, really, to put it very bluntly. So the treatment just, you know, it sort of becomes routine. It's I have my infusion tomorrow, and I know what to expect. And I took Revlimid last night, and I know what to expect with that. And it's, you know, it's worth it. The benefits are worth it.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. I mean, Michael, Paul, Judy, and Jill all had maintenance therapy questions, and some of it's regional. I spoke to a support group up in the Twin Cities, up in Minneapolis, and there were probably 40 people in the room. There's some caregivers, of course. Let's say there are 28 patients. And up there, University of Minnesota is a very strong program, a myeloma program, and, of course, Mayo Clinic. That's only an hour and a half from Rochester, where the Mayo Clinic is. And as we went around the room, I realized, you know, majority of these patients are not using maintenance, including people that have relapsed. The rule of thumb has been if you relapse, you pretty much stay on maintenance. And the majority of these patients were not. And that's a Mayo Clinic, softer, kinder, gentler type approach. The studies are so odd. And study after study shows this. There's a PFS, progression-free survival. That means how long does it take for the myeloma to come back, to become active again, okay? So after stem cell transplant or after you reach a CR, complete response, you know, you're in remission, how long does it take for it to start up again, to get going again? And on average, we're looking at a 19, 20, 21-month advantage using maintenance versus not using maintenance. Almost 2 years, study after study. And so it's like, well, you got to use maintenance. Well, but here's the thing. The strange part is when you look at overall survival of these patients, they're really close. There might be a month or 2 or 3 months advantage to maintenance, and that's it. And you're like, what? You mean I've taken these drugs, which Matt's in a routine, I'm in a routine, but there are certainly some inconveniences. You know, your immune system tends to be suppressed. There can be complications, blood clots, whatever. I had melanoma, a secondary cancer, most likely because I was being treated with Revlimid, and I'm down here in the Florida sun. And it's not a good combination. The point is, so you go through all of that, and you're telling me I might live 3 months longer. Maybe Mayo Clinic has it right. Maybe I should take a break. Maintenance is not a clear-cut thing. Now, what I don't know is what happens. These studies don't, if you take a 3-month or 6-month holiday, drug-free holiday, something like that. Of course, there are an infinite amount of variables, but for the straightforward a way to compare apples to apples, you know, you stay on maintenance up to 2 years longer before the myeloma comes back, but in the end, somebody that's just stops, and then when the myeloma comes back, think about it. I'm going to hit it with a drug that it's naive to, that it hasn't seen, versus when I'm on maintenance, and now it comes back, that myeloma is resistant. And in the end, you pretty much end up in the same place. It's a fascinating conundrum. Most specialists think that in the end, maintenance is going to bear itself out and be the way to go. I've got to say this. I'm sorry, but the drug companies pay for these studies. And I'm not going to editorialize one way or the other, but, you know, in the spirit of full disclosure, if I'm getting, let's see, what was my infusion today? It was $1,600, I believe, for one shot. You know, if you're putting up numbers like those, $8,000-$10,000 for a month worth of Revlimid, you think the drug companies are motivated to find the data that supports using maintenance therapy? I mean, a logical person has to at least look at that. But I think the specialists, these doctors, I'm not impugning their characters. On the contrary, they want to help. And so do the drug company people. But, you know, there are all of these, you know, we're just humans and we have different motivations. And nobody's really out there spending big tens of millions of dollars to try to prove you can take a drug holiday. Right?
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting point. I recently talked to both my doctors, to Dr. Berenson and then my local oncologist, whose name is Luke Fan, and I talked to both of them about taking a drug vacation, if you will. And they were both adamant that I cannot do that, to stick with what I'm doing. And, you know, as a patient, it's a little frightening to think about going off your drugs if they're working, you know. And so it is a conundrum because, you know, it's working, but you'd like to not take the drugs. So what do you do?
Yes, you're so right. I mean, think there's a comfort in that you're doing something, that you're being treated, of course. And by the way, standard, my understanding is that the doctors you're seeing are correct, that the standard of care for a relapse patient, and or not so much that you're relapsed, but you had a very difficult case up front, staying on maintenance is probably most likely the way to go. And if you talk to 10 myeloma specialists, I bet 8 or 9 of them would say stay on. So
yeah, exactly. My myeloma was pretty aggressive, so I'll stay on it as long as I need to stay on it.
Great. Let's see. What do we got here?
Pat, I just received a question from one of our listeners via mail. David, can you hear me? David asked, how many cycles of induction before you start to consider next round of therapy?
Did you get that, Matt?
No, I didn't. Can you repeat that?
Okay, I shall repeat that. How many cycles of induction before you start to consider next round of therapy?
How many cycles before we...
Yeah.
Yeah. How many cycles of induction? Induction.
Well, again, my case was different. The first sort of regimen that we tried, I think I did 3 cycles before we gave it up. And for me, a cycle was 3 weeks, I guess. No, well, I guess a cycle is a month. So what I would do, 3 weeks out of 4, I would do induction, and we did that for only 3 cycles. When we tried the second drug, I only did 1 cycle, and we knew right away that it wouldn't work. And then when I did my third protocol, I think I did 2 cycles, and which is then when we switched to the Treanda, which worked, and I did 12 cycles before we went on to maintenance. And now I think I'm on my 15th cycle of maintenance. A lot of people, my maintenance, I do infusion. I do Velcade and dexamethasone infusion. I know a lot of people take dexamethasone at home or orally, but I do mine infusion. So I'm on my 15th. You know, I did 12 cycles of the Treanda, which worked. and then I'm on my 15th cycle of maintenance. And my cycle is every other Thursday I go in for infusion.
So I guess the short answer is it depends. And,
it depends. I've done a lot.
You want to? I believe you're going to stay on induction as long as the numbers continue to go down. And that at some point, if you're down but not in CR and you stay on a couple months and your numbers don't budge, that I think that's normally when the doctors, if you get a transplant, then that's the time to go to transplant. You just want to keep your heavier tumor burden be as low as possible, whether that's an M spike of 0.2 or 0.4 or 1, if it was 3 or 4 before. If you're down, if you're going down a tenth of your M spike is going down a tenth, 0.1 every month, most doctors, I think, would keep you on induction until it stopped.
Yeah. And Pat, we actually don't really even track the M spike. We track the protein that I put out, the protein in my urine, and that's sort of our main measure. So we track how my protein looks every month,
yes.
And then we look at what's called the UPEP, which is, the bad protein, if you will, and that's a percentage, mm-hmm. And we look at what the percentage is of my total protein, and as long as that keeps stable, I'll keep doing what I'm doing. The good thing right now is that, even since I was diagnosed, there's a bunch of new effective myeloma drugs out there. So I think, in my case, we already know if what I'm doing doesn't work, I already know what the next thing I'll go on will be. So, we already have kind of a plan of attack for going into the future.
And that's great, and that's always hopeful. I know 20-plus year survivors. There are more and more decade-long survivors. When I was diagnosed 6 years ago, the odds of living 10 years was about 5%.
Yeah.
And I would say now that is probably shot up to 1 out of 5 or better, depending on what the cytogenics are, how you are, how well you're going to respond to treatment. Matt, I want to get to Sharia's question, because I don't want to run out of time. She has two questions here about cure. What are the curative treatments for multiple myeloma? And where are these available and at what cost? My flip answer is, I believe at any cost someone would do that. And then she talks about the right approach. Why don't you talk a little bit about the cure aspect. How do you view all of that? You're a pretty optimistic guy.
Yeah. Like almost everybody, I hadn't even heard about myeloma until I was diagnosed with it. And I think Anne's question earlier, I hear about it a lot now. I don't think it necessarily means there's more of it. I just think I'm more attuned to it. Well, the first thing you read is that it's incurable, that it's treatable but incurable. So I know we hear some folks talk about that it's cured, that they're cured. But I think even in those cases, even if you're quote-unquote cured, there's a chance that your myeloma will come back. So that's the thing with myeloma is it's never really – as far as I know, and I'm, again, like Pat said, I'm not a doctor. Pat actually is more technically knowledgeable than I am, but my understanding is it's never really cured, but it's absolutely treatable and manageable. So there's a difference there. The goal with treating myeloma, the way I see it, is to turn it into a chronic disease as opposed to something that's super critical, where you only have months or only a few years to live. You turn it into something chronic where you just have to treat it and you just know that that's what you're doing for the rest of your life. So it's not necessarily cured. In terms of the second question, I've never heard of anyone getting radiation for myeloma. Myeloma is different, where you don't have this one tumor that you want to kind of blast away with the radiation. It's in your bone marrow. It's in your blood. So you can't really, I mean, again, this is my understanding, is you can't really go after it with radiation. It's chemotherapy.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt, but I'm gonna cut you off here because
no problem. And
actually, radiation is quite common.
Okay,
and,
thank you.
and that you didn't face that. Many patients will have what's called a plasmacytoma, basically a myeloma tumor. They may only have one or two, or they may have a couple spots that show up as worse than others. And if that's the case, for you it was more of a case of chemistry and kidney, which, by the way, I'm sure there's somebody out there that has kidney issues and bone involvement. But the majority of patients seem to have one or the other. Isn't that interesting? It must just be a different type of myeloma, and they haven't broken that down yet. But so, you know, you haven't gone through that, but I've had radiation twice. And so let's say there's a plasmacytoma in your hip, very common. It's a large bone, puts out a lot of bone marrow, and so and it's painful. So they'll radiate your hip at the same time you're starting chemotherapy. You almost they can be done simultaneously. You don't feel good. It's not necessarily any fun, but they can do both at the same time. So it's really not so much about the order. And you can have radiation multiple times. I have a friend that, like, every 6 to 9 months for over a decade, his myeloma would, something would pop back up. There'd be a lump on his head or something would show up on a rib. And so he would, a lot of times, get those radiated. And that radiation is very effective in destroying that particular tumor. But unfortunately, as we know, if it's in that one spot, like Matt just said, it's more than likely going to be someplace else. So it's not, you know, a great treatment for the long haul, but there's a lot of short-term benefit. Well, sorry to cut you off, Matt, but on that one,
No, thanks. I appreciate it. I always list something myself. And I think, going back to the other question from Shreya, is that where are these available? You know, well, just in terms of, I guess the question really should be is, where are myeloma specialists available? Because, again, that's who you really want to see. And they're spread out over the country. I'm here in L.A., and Berenson's here, and Pat mentioned Arkansas and the Mayo Clinic, and I know there's I've gotten to know some patients on the East Coast who go to a couple different places back there, you know, in New York and in the Boston area.
Dana-Farber, Sloan Kettering.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a number of myeloma specialists out there. And like Pat said, at what cost? Whatever it takes, really.
Sure, and unfortunately, no matter how much you spend, there's still no guarantee of a cure. Nancy Shimana, who is going to be one of our panel members on Monday night, when Danny Parker, who is studies and really gets into diet and nutrition for myeloma patients, and he's a lifestyle columnist, I call him, on my blog, because he does a column every couple of weeks, and exercise, spirituality. The guy is literally a Buddhist priest. He's a Buddhist priest, a solar engineer out of Cocoa Beach, where they used to have the NASA space program, and definitely a Renaissance man, an author. He's published, I think, 7 books on, believe of all things, World War II. So he's always in Europe. He'll email me from Austria or something, doing research on another book. He's just a fascinating guy. Well, anyway, Nancy is Canadian, and she was sharing that pomalidomide, one of those new drugs that Matt just mentioned, Pomalyst, and which is sort of like Revlimid, the next generation Revlimid, and Kyprolis, or carfilzomib, which is the next generation Velcade, they're not available in Canada yet. They're not available in Europe, or barely available in Europe. So when you talk about where to go, you know, in cases like that, I guess the United States is the place to be.
Yeah, well, and actually, the drug that worked for me, Treanda, that I mentioned was actually
and that's bendamustine, isn't that the? I think Treanda is a trade name. I believe bendamustine is the
yeah, I think so.
Sort of
I
common
right.
name they call it, or generic name.
But I think it was being used on myeloma in Europe before it was being used over here in the United States. It had some success over there, and now it's becoming used a little more over here in the United States.
And you know what we can do over here that they can't do in Europe or Canada is you can use these drugs off-label, and that's how Vorinostat, for example, or Treanda, that's how these drugs can be used, Cytoxan. See, all of those drugs are used for other cancers. And so a doctor can say, let's try this off-label. Oh, they're much stricter in Europe. No way can you be doing stuff like that. Very strict guidelines.
Yeah. Hey, Pat, I want to add just one more something else. You know,
sure.
We've talked a lot about drugs and how to treat it, but I think it's important to mention, as a myeloma patient, there's other things you want to do too. You know, diet and exercise, I think, are really important to your success. I've become a real believer in acupuncture.
Really?
I started doing acupuncture when my kidneys were at their worst. We tried to focus the acupuncture on my kidneys, and they kind of bounced, you know, maybe it's coincidence, maybe not, but they bounced back after I started doing acupuncture. So, you know, I've tried to mix in a whole bunch of other stuff along. You know, I do what the doctors say, and I do all the drugs, but I've also tried to really change what I put in my body and how I take care of myself and all that other stuff. I think it all really works in combination.
Complementary medicine.
Complementary medicine. And I think,
absolutely.
You know, also thinking positive thoughts and visualizing getting important. If you had asked me about all that stuff a couple years ago, I wouldn't have thought much of it, but I think now it's all really important stuff. You got to put it all together, and everything works together.
Sage advice. Well, Priya, are we just about ready?
Yeah, thank you so much, Pat. I think you've given out a lot of information. I hope the people who are listening have really benefited from this. So none of them actually came up to ask a question. I'm sure they have imbibed something from all that you and Matt have been discussing. Thank you so very much. We look forward to having everyone join us again for our next show on Diet and Myeloma with Danny Stacker and Pat Killingsworth on September the 2nd at 6 p.m. ET. Thank you so much. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Matt. Wonderful.
Well, thank you very much, Pat, and thanks, Priya, as always.
Thank you, Matt. Bye-bye.
Bye.